Hello.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Yeah, lots of hellos, and we're here, and we're talking, and then we're podcasting.
Mm-hmm. You say goodbye, and I say hello.
Podcast.
It's not how that song goes, but
you,
sure.
You think Apple will pay us to make a podcast? Are we good enough for that?
Are you talking about Apple, the music company that produced the Beatles records, or are you talking about Apple, the company that is potentially financing podcasts?
I wouldn't say no to either of them.
Oh.
if they brought the money, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Show me the money, as they say.
Show us large quantities of money, and I will continue to make podcasts the same way that I've been making them for.
It just sounds like a threat.
Yeah.
Now,
if you want us to continue doing exactly what we're doing, give us some money. Because if you don't give us money, you never know what we could do. We could stop. We could do something worse. We could do something better, and then you would miss out of all of the potential profits, fame. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure they're really focus on that. No, in regards to the Apple's financing podcast rumor, I suspect it's going to be the same as the TV stuff, where they look for famous people who make things and then pay them money to make things for them. And that does raise several questions, because one of the most popular forms of podcast, genre-wise, is the true crime murder mystery. And it'd be kind of weird to see Apple finance some sort of true crime podcast. But maybe they could do it on Jack the Ripper or something, and then they could call it Apple Jack the Serial Killer. Because there's layers to that, Dan. But I just don't see them doing something so tasteless. But it would also be weird to see them do the other form of popular podcast, which is the Comedians Have a Microphone podcast, that would be just strange too, because it'd be like, which comedians would Apple pay money to? Would their humor be family safe enough for this stuff? Like, are they being too mean? As some of the supposed notes have been in regards to the TV content. I have no idea.
A lot of these comedians that have a microphone podcast are really just comedians talking about how difficult it is to be performers. So I think that could be good for.
Yeah. Also talking about how difficult it is to find the right toothbrush, and how difficult it is to make a website, and how difficult it is to find a comfortable mattress. But anyway, I
skip all of the ads these days, but which is interesting, because I am relishing Instagram ads these days. I don't know if it's
what?
Because I have cultivated my algorithm.
Ugh.
But I see so many ads for the dumbest like Kickstarter level tech products that it's just I love them so much. There's a thing that you strap down to the top of your mattress that has a little tube that goes out of it that circulates water through it to help keep you cool while you sleep, which makes me laugh so much every time I see it. There's so many good products.
Yeah, well, just the verbal description of that made me think of some other things, but sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a cooling mat for your bed.
Mm, yes.
With water cooling. Like a liquid cooled PC, but for your mattress.
So strange. Yeah, no, that's weird. But I don't think I have anything positive to say about ads that I've experienced recently. Although we are going to talk about a form of an advertisement.
Advertising's good. I like advertising. It's fun.
Yeah, well,
I like it more than most people's Instagram photos these days.
Okay, I'm going to be honest with you. I like ambitious advertising that does neat things. I don't like lazy advertising.
What would you call ambitious advertising?
Remember that Super Bowl commercial that was about herding cats?
No. Oh. It was like a rancher.
He was herding cats, and there were a lot of cats. Anyway, it was a fun thing, and that was a long time ago.
You just like
and I remember
puns,
the products
because you're a pun boy.
I just want to be entertained. And a lot of these things, you know, the ads, they don't entertain me.
I'm entertained by ads. Lots of ads. I even like the bad ads because you can look at it and go, boy, they really phoned that one in.
Yeah, there's an insurance commercial that Jason cracks up at. I don't remember what the insurance company is, but this woman has her she shed in the backyard, and her she shed catches on fire, and it's just them saying she shed over and over again.
It took me 6 months to figure out what she was saying when she said she shear. I'm like, she shear? Like a sheep? Like, what are you saying?
She shed. Like,
yeah, I know, but like she shear, that's not a word that registered with my brain. I'm getting a new she shear, she shed.
No, but
I don't understand.
She said she shed by the she's sure.
Yeah, no, I don't love that commercial in particular.
No. I thought you liked all advertising, blah blah blah. You
know. No, that one goes in my pile of bad ads because I can see the edit points, I can see the multiple takes, I can see where they cut it down from a 60 down to a 30 or down to a 15 or whatever it is. And also they run that same exact ad as audio only on the radio, and it's very bad.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Anyway,
I haven't listened to radio in a while. But
you're good, Cheryl. Your she shed's covered.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to talk about a form of advertising.
A form of advertising.
Are you going to let me finish the sentence at any point? You're going to talk about a form of advertising, which is the movie trailer.
Welcome to our TED Talk. It sounds like we're standing in front of a room full of like undergrads and we're giving them a presentation on marketing or something.
Well, I mean, we kind of are. This is an educational podcast on occasion.
Yeah, we are the experts in a field.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are helping guide the youth into their next phase of life, which may involve a career in marketing. And here's what you can expect.
Well, see, first of all, kids, as someone who's worked on many trailers, let me tell you, there's something called a locked cut, which is a lie. Never believe anybody who says locked cut. Also,
nothing is locked. Nothing is locked up until the email with the ProRes file is sent. Nothing is locked.
No, and they'll still revise it for a special release that they'll do afterwards. I've worked on projects where it's in the movie theaters and people are still making stuff for the home video version because it can be better for that, but they ran out of time.
Boy howdy.
But there's a, you know, when it comes to these trailers, things change from trailer to movie, and the marketing department is very clearly in charge of these sorts of things, and they call the shots, and sometimes you're going to see stuff that's in the trailers that's not in the movies, either because the filmmaker's a giant jerk, or because the marketing department is a giant jerk, full of giant jerks, or any mix, anywhere in between, you know, you got
it's
your...
It's also just because the edit's not locked, so got a lot of footage to pull from, too.
Yeah, but there was a movie that I worked on where they had talking things that were not real, and...
That's a different story.
Yeah, the dialogue was cut special just for the trailer, and they were not going to be actual shots in the movie. They just wanted to use these lines from the dialogue that they thought were funny. That the animals would say for the trailer.
You know, the thing about most of those is that the dialogue is not funny.
No, it's very rarely entertaining. Who knows what entertains marketing people? I imagine that you get a little punchy when you're just sitting in a conference room, you know, working through lunch, with your deluxe catered, whatever it is, that they brought in.
You know, I always knew that marketing folks were big fans of data and things and information about the things. But it has recently become more clear to me how much that data can drive their decisions. Like you'll get, this is completely hypothetical, but you'll get like a comment like, we need more of the shot of the dog because statistically, trailers that have at least 7 seconds of a dog in them throughout them get 60% higher viewership than trailers that don't have dogs in them. Mm-hmm. And that just, you just think like, what? No. But then you have to put more dog in there. You're like, fine, whatever, the dog's in there. It doesn't make a difference. But like, you're just doing things because some graph told one person something, and you know, they saw a different TED talk, so they're gonna make the decisions.
Yeah, and then that one person, you know, they did the research to figure out that people respond very well to slowed down versions of pop songs and rock songs that are played over trailers. That happens too.
The song in this Terminator trailer is so 10 years ago. It's just like one note and then slowly singing. I don't even remember what song it was, but it's
forgettable.
It's very
much
boring.
Like the trailer. We should say that we have, mainly Dan. Dan has selected.
I like watching trailers, and I kept watching them. I'm like, oh, this one's good. We'll talk about that one too. And then, oh, that one's good. We'll put this one in here too.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't get as invested in trailers.
It's only 2 minutes long, though. It's not like getting invested in the whole movie.
No, but they very rarely end up changing my mind in regards to what it is that I will be seeing or thinking or feeling about something, or how likely I am to participate in a thing.
Don't spark joy. You're not gonna fold it in thirds and put it in your dresser.
No, in our previous trailer episodes, I talked about how I used to really like trailers when they were a big, you know, fancy internet thing, when everybody would go download the 2040p or 360p if you were on a really good connection. Maybe you'd even get a 480 that you could download without closing the browser or losing your connection, which you would have to restart the download on. It'd take a while, but then you get that QuickTime file and you could play it back on your machine whenever you wanted to.
You could step through it frame by frame and be like, I think I see a thing over there that's going to be a thing that I know about.
Yeah, yeah. What are these interesting looking lizard people going through this swampy forest thing that are gonna go fight these android thing robot things? Oh, this is crazy. Oh no, it was episode one. But that episode we did about trailers.
I was just trying to figure out what you were talking about.
Yeah, well, that episode we did about trailers, we talked about that disappointment and the history of that. It's less novel these days because you can just stream it live, like whenever, just click. And Apple is less enthusiastic about it, so you're not really like downloading it and frame by framing through it. YouTube, everybody downloads the official version, then re-uploads it and calls it the official version, and then puts a watermark of whatever terrible movie site, trailer site thing they have on the bottom corner. Then they write HD audio in the description because why the hell not?
I mean, as long as it's 96 kilohertz, it's HD audio.
People are so sloppy about this stuff and thirsty for views. But what really gets me is when they re-upload something and you have to watch a pre-roll ad for your trailer, which is an ad itself. Whatever.
Sometimes I appreciate that because it gives me the opportunity to click the full screen button and then to make sure my volume is correct. Oh, actually not even the full screen button, and then click the little gear icon to make sure it's actually in 1080. Because normally I have to pause it immediately and then do all that stuff. And then because YouTube has to autoplay. Of course, you can't go to a page with a video on it and not have it immediately start playing, because that would be insane.
Well, most people just want it to start playing, Dan.
Well, I don't.
Well, sorry. You're not most people.
Maybe I should take my exquisite taste over to Vimeo, where I have to click a play button like an animal.
Or, as you found out today, you can go to trailers.apple.com.
if you want to see what the Apple website looked like 15 years ago, there's still an opportunity to do that at trailers.apple.com.
Man, that has not aged well.
I've still got this like weird active live search search box here that's sort of like windows down based on your as you're typing, and it's clearly the same code that they had in it for decades.
Yeah, and what I really love is it feels very 2006, 2007-ish, because it has like a little embedded video thing that shows up. It doesn't even like go full screen or anything like that, and it grays out the thing behind it, and it's like, oh man, you guys, the on-screen controls.
Or whatever. Front row was the Mac one, right?
Yeah. It just looks kind of silly. But the reason why it's still updated, I assume, is because it's somehow just linked into all of the other movie trailer stuff that Apple has, and it just auto-updates.
They haven't broken their own API for pulling stuff out of the iTunes library yet.
Yeah. But the trailers that you selected today were Terminator.
You agreed, too. Don't make that I forced this upon you.
Yeah, I mean, I said okay, so... It's my fault. Yeah. Terminator, Dark Fate is the name of it. Then you got your Fast and the Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. Then you got King's Man, and you've got Knives Out. You have, and we have something that I had put forward this morning. It was the featurette teasing the trailer for Cats, which, as of the recording time, has not been released. It is teased for a Friday release, which will come out before this podcast. But it's something I look forward to watching, because there are a lot of questions that this featurette raises and does not answer. And then you got your Once Upon a Time in Hollywood trailer, which I admit I actively avoided until you put it on this list for me to watch.
All right. So you want to do chronological? You want to do reverse chronological? You want to do alphabetical? What do you want to do here?
Well, let's just do it in the order that I just said, Dan.
Okay.
All right. That's the order of the list that you gave me.
Well, just, I'm giving you options. I want to make it seem like this is it's not a homework assignment.
Yeah, but then it wouldn't make any sense that I read the list in that order, and I'm not going to re-edit it so that it matches whatever new order you come up with.
Maybe you
should have thought about it when you made this list.
The bulleted list that I continued to revise and add stuff to. Yeah, I did consider putting Once Upon a Time in Hollywood above Cats, because Cats isn't actually a trailer, but then I'm like, it doesn't really matter what order these are in. Now it does.
Couldn't figure out what was going on with this. But so anyway, Terminator Dark Fate. I had seen this trailer a little while ago, and then I refreshed my memory today by watching it again, and I had to, because it's forgettable, and I've already started to forget bits and pieces of what I just watched probably 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, that will happen.
Yeah. It's a Terminator, latter-day Terminator sequel trailer thing.
Yeah, it's slow. It has lots of fades. It's got that really soft, quiet music with somebody singing weirdly to it. But wasn't the rumor that this movie was going to retcon everything after Terminator 2, and they were going to finally get back to like the OG like Terminator canon material and throw out all that terrible stuff? But it looks to my eyes that they've taken all of the things from all of the five movies previous to this and sort of rolled them into one thing that is hopefully not as terrible as the previous three.
As we've established before, I stopped watching these after Salvation, so I have not seen Genesis.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So you're only missing one of them.
Yeah, which I assume is what the black goo Terminator is from ish. Well, kind of
in five he's nanobots, so he kind of floats through the sky, but in five he also has that same sort of like angular chamfer space gray kind of skeleton looking thing going. I don't know when chrome fell out of fashion for the Terminators, but
it was space gray.
Yeah,
it's for professionals.
Right, sure, exactly. He's a professional Terminator, so you got to get the space gray, most boring option. But yeah, that look. And then, what's her name's? I'm a human, but I've got metal bits. That's from Salvation. So
Yeah, when I was watching it, she's like, oh, I'm human, and she's the Terminator who thinks she's human. And I was like, oh, that hasn't happened ever. Oh, Arnold's here? Oh, no way.
Arnold is old because his flesh has continued to age because he is an older model.
This really looks just sad.
Yeah, and to be honest, like I didn't really even get any particular satisfaction seeing Linda Hamilton pop up there.
No. She comes in. She looks like a face-apped Kara Swisher, and she's got her bazooka and her thing, and she does her stuff, and is solemn. I don't know. It's probably not representative of her role and performance in the movie, but it felt like the people who made this trailer were like, everybody's just going to be so jazzed to see her. And then it's like, okay, well, I'm happy she's here, but at end of my excitement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I like her, and hopefully they use her well, but you know, when she's got the sunglasses on and she's got her weapons, and maybe the whole point of that role right there is to, for her to be like, I learned my lesson with the other liquid Terminator boy with, when I ran out of shotgun shells, so I got this big old drum of shotgun shells now and a bazooka. But it just, it's like, I don't know. We enjoyed seeing her be tough in Terminator 2, but like fighting tooth and nail, not like she has some sort of like Kevin McAllister plan where she can like thwart the Terminator at every step of the way. Like, that's not the Sarah Connor that we really enjoyed, but whatever, we'll see.
Yeah, she was, you know, she was not really entirely sane.
She starts in a mental institution, right?
Yeah, and also later on she resolves to commit homicide to protect the future. So she's, you know, she had some stuff going on. But in this one, I don't know what motivates her. I assume that'll be explained in the movie. But
it just has a bit of an air of shoot 'em up with less story, right? It's like, I'm here because I know what needs to be done, and it involves walking slowly and looking cool and shooting big guns, and not so much like, I don't know, maybe part of it is because the sunglasses over her face, and you don't get to see that just like utter panic in her eyes at every step of the way in Terminator 2, where it's just like, no, you don't understand how important it is to kill all of these people and destroy all of this stuff in this office, otherwise the world is going to end. She's just sort of like, look at me, I got a vest on and a big old shotgun.
This trailer just is a lot of previously seen on Terminator stuff, just rejiggered in a different form factor.
It seems to be continuing to miss the point of Terminator.
And I'm not invested in it. So it'll probably come and go like Genesis did, and I won't really care.
Mm. Genesis had a lot of cool San Francisco stuff in it, though.
Sure.
It was the bridge. It was that they did the thing where the bus flipped over on the bridge.
I believe you.
It was in the trailer.
I don't even remember, Dan.
They did the thing with the Dark Knight where they flipped the semi truck, but it was a school bus and it was on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, that's fantastic for them. Yeah. No, I just don't care. The Terminator franchise is just poorly written fan fiction. I don't really care that Cameron is involved in producing, or how much Tim Miller loves the source material, and how serious people are about getting back to whatever roots or basics or
basics. No. I was going to say, the one thing that was interesting in the trailer is that ending shot, because it's just such a massive, ridiculous spectacle where you've got the two military planes that crash into each other and the Terminator jumps from one to the other, and then like they're falling and you got the Humvee on the parachute and it's flaming all around them as it goes, like the plane goes flying past them and stuff. And that was neat in a very sort of big VFX spectacle kind of way. But that could be literally any movie. It doesn't have to have anything to do with Terminator.
It did nothing for me. I am not as impressed by just like generic spectacle. So whatever. We'll find out what happens with that one, but nothing about this trailer has changed my mind to not see it.
Terminator is the franchise similar to Die Hard, that they want to squeeze every bit of blood out of the stone, and they're just going to keep trying until they think like, we got it this time. At least Die Hard, they got to 5 and they're like, "Woo, that was really bad, we should stop now."
Now, speaking of sequels and spinoffs and generic action sequences,
go ahead.
You wanted me to watch Hobbs and Shaw. Yeah. And so I did.
There were some other trailers that came out before this one that had a little bit more comedy in them. I'm not sure where they went. Maybe it was also on that page, but I just watched the most recent one.
Yeah, I just watched the most recent one as well. And when I had said, are you sure you want to watch Hobbs and Shaw? I'm not sure I have much to say about it. And you said, sure you will. Well, it is what it is.
You didn't find the Transformer motorcycle sliding under the semi truck thing kind of cool?
Not in the least. But I have not been titillated by the Fast and the Furious franchise, so this might appeal to, I'm going to assume,
children.
No, I was going to say all of the fans of the Fast and the Furious
children.
They're not all children, Dan. A lot of them are
mentally. I mean,
a lot of them are adults who just really like to watch things go fast.
It's silliness is what it is. I think the thing that I have appreciated about the Fast and the Furious movies, the last couple of them, is that they continue to find a way to ramp it up and make it all the more absurd and ridiculous and still somehow like a spectacle where you kind of go like, whoa, that was something new I had never seen before. And in a very sort of like kids smashing model cars together kind of way, but this one also seems like it has a lot of that. Like, yeah, this trailer did a bad job of it, but The Rock and Jason Statham have some delightful chemistry with each other where they hate each other and there's comedy and stuff, but there's also a lot of really ridiculous VFX sequences in here where stuff is flying all over the place and doing all kinds of wackadoo stuff. And I think it's going to be interesting in like an Avengers-y kind of way to just like watch these things fly around and smash and have some comedy there. But I don't know.
It doesn't do it for me. But I'm not somebody to whom the Fast and the Furious movies have appealed.
You don't even know what kind of car that was in the trailer, do you?
Was that a Pagani whatever Zonda thing?
It was a McLaren, but no,
whatever.
Props for knowing what a Pagani Zonda is.
Yeah, well, both of those dealerships are near me.
There's a Pagani dealership near you?
Yes, and they have all these little printed out signs that they put everywhere, including on the cars, that say no photographs.
Yeah,
it's very funny.
I can't even pronounce the current Pagani. It's the Huayra or whatever. It's with an H or something. It's silly looking.
Interesting. Yeah. So if you like Fast and the Furious, there you go. And now let's move on to another surprisingly generic action trailer for Kingsman.
The Kingsman. They prequeled it.
Yeah, I don't know if I hadn't been reading any news about it. I knew it was greenlit and it was happening and stuff. But when I started watching it, and I was like, this seems early in like time and stuff. And then I was like, oh, it is a prequel. Wait, is this whole thing a prequel?
Was it the World War I helmets and the kilt on the battlefield that gave it away?
Yeah, and the gas masks and Rasputin, I think. And I don't know what was going on. But this is not really what I sign up for when it comes to the Kingsman franchise. I thought this was kind of just dry and actiony.
Is it too serious for the franchise?
It doesn't seem to take itself seriously. I wouldn't say serious, but
what are you talking about? There's not an ounce of comedy in the trailer.
Well, but it's what it's showing is heightened. It's not realistic.
I suppose, but it appears to be the story of like the king who first commissioned his own private little security guy who dresses up as a tailor kind of thing.
Yeah, it's bad. Well, the trailer anyway. Maybe the movie has some of the comedic elements that I would look for, some of the farce.
Scott Ray Fiennes being kind of a badass dude, so that's always helpful.
But that has nothing to do with the comedy part. But Ray Fiennes can be funny. None of that was on display in this trailer. So who knows what the actual movie really holds. But I was disappointed by the sequel, as we talked about when we watched Kingsman the Golden Circle with Micah. And it was not as interesting as the original. I have found both the original and the sequel to be very regressive in terms of like gender politics and other things and murdering dogs.
It's like an Austin Powers movie. You watch it now, you're like, ooh, that comedy not so long lasting.
Well, it wasn't great when they did it, Dan.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously.
It wasn't like this was done like 30 years ago, but yeah, the Kingsman franchise, I don't know, but this one feels especially bro-y. So I don't know. I'm gonna wait and see what the reviews are on this one. Yeah.
Fair enough.
How do you feel about it? Because you are the one who convinced me to watch Kingsman because you worked on it and said you liked it and then told me to watch it. And so I did. I know that you really like Kingsman. So what did this trailer do for you?
I think it did a couple of the things that a good trailer can do for a movie. Primarily that it made me think about a lot of the cool options that it could be leading towards. It seems like they're going to spend a fair amount of time sort of setting up the background and explaining sort of the scope and the intricacies of this like Kingsman organization, which is one of the things that they kind of gloss over in the previous movies. It's irrelevant too, because it's like, yeah, this thing's been around for a very long time, and now we're going to bring in this new kid who's going to sort of change things up. This one sort of gives you an opportunity to like, well, okay, what was it like when MI6 was first founded, when they first started the 00 program? Like, what kind of cool story could you tell in there? And I think there's some interesting opportunity with that sort of stuff. Just, you know, kind of lets my imagination run wild. So that's what I like in the trailer there. I think in a weird kind of like, I don't know, in a weird way, I've come to appreciate Matthew Vaughn's directing style when it comes to the Kingsman, which is very Kingsman-y and lots of weird camera moves and wide angles and shots that are stitched into other shots that are very clearly not one long take kind of junk, but he does some cool stuff that's dynamic, and I think it's interesting to watch. Because I'm a fan of the, you know, the very showy filmmakers from time to time, to sort of see how they do things and what they do, and I think that's probably the theme of all of these trailers, if there is one.
Not cats.
But in a very like, in the way the Fast and the Furious stuff is like, look what we can do with visual effects and imagination. Matthew Vaughn's kind of like, look what I can do with the camera and some clever wipes. I don't mean clever wipes in post-production and some serious story. And I don't know. I'm interested to see what he has in store there. Ray Fiennes is good, and I hope there is some comedy in it, because that really lends itself to a nice contrast to the seriousness of the British Secret Service kind of vibe going on.
Yeah, I would be surprised if there was no comedy, but I don't know from this trailer what I would expect in terms of what could be comedic, but we will.
It's fairly odd that the Kingsman kid, the young kid who is assisting Ray Fiennes in this trailer, he looks wide-eyed and he stands there a lot, but he doesn't say anything, and we don't know anything about him. At least I don't know anything about him from anything else. So he's just kind of there, and you're like, I think this guy is the main character, but hard to tell from this trailer. But maybe it's just too early, because you can also, the other thing you can tell from this trailer is that there are like two sequences from the movie that kind of sort of have a like an 80% locked cut that they pulled from, because there's a lot of stuff that's probably not in here.
Yeah. So could be interesting, and I'll see what it is. Now, speaking of comedies, we've got Knives Out, which is the movie that Rian Johnson has worked on after The Last Jedi. He's taking a break from his Star Wars duties, and it's not entirely what I had expected. It is a Wes Anderson murder mystery.
It's James Bond as Clue kind of thing.
With a Southern accent.
Is that what that accent is? Southern?
I think that's what Daniel Craig was trying to do.
Because he says CSI KFC, right?
Yes.
So that must be Southern.
Yeah, and then they lingered on it because it was a hilarious joke. Now, I have some bones to pick with this. I'm not that excited about what was depicted here, but I love every actor that's in this. I especially love Jamie Lee Curtis being here. I think she's fantastic. I think she has excellent comic timing, and I find her just engaging to watch no matter what. And you got your Toni Collette's and your Chris Evans's and the what's his face from the movie about Get Out.
Lakeith Stanfield, yes.
Yes. And you've got some other notable actors. Christopher Plummer is here, and it's a whodunit, and they all have to stay in the house until they find out who it is, and then there's obviously stuff in here where they're not in the house. So it seems like it could be entertaining and exciting, maybe. But there is an oddity to how this was cut and put together, and it seems like there's supposed to be like a beat for a laugh or something, and then I noticed no laugh uttering forth from my being, so I thought it was just kind of like oddly edited. But it could be good. And like I said, I find all of these people entertaining. I am incredibly skeptical of what Daniel Craig is doing, but maybe it's fine. Maybe you just let that go as you're watching it. Remember Logan Lucky when mm-hmm. Daniel Craig also said, "Hey, you know what? I can do an accent." I don't think that accents are a gift that he really has a mastery over.
At least in Logan Lucky, he had the hair to match his accent.
Yeah, and in this one, he just looks like normal Daniel Craig. He just has a weird accent. It's peculiar. I'd almost buy it more if it had been another actor, like, you know, I don't know, Kenneth Branagh or something. Like, get some other over-the-top English actor in here to do a fake Southern accent. But it's really peculiar, a peculiar choice. But, you know, whatever. What do I know? The guy is a gifted director that people love, and so it could be interesting.
I enjoy him on the internet.
I like him on the internet the most out of all the things he does.
Yeah, maybe me too.
Yeah, because as we talked about when we did the episode on Looper, very disappointed in it. And as we talked about when we did the Last Jedi, I thought it was a mess, and I was incredibly disappointed in it. Now we got this one, and it looks messy in the trailer, but it could be entertaining. That's how trailers work, kids. Speaking of messes, you know what cats like to leave?
Messes.
Yes. And the Cats movie team tweeted a featurette, a behind-the-scenes featurette, to tease...
It's so long, too.
Yeah. What is it, like 3 minutes and 20 seconds? They did it to tease the release of the trailer on Friday. And
which is like normally they would just take a 5 second or a 10 second version of the trailer to tease, but I think they have something very special in mind coming forth for this trailer on Friday, vis-a-vis technology that they don't want to spoil. What things are going to look like? So they did the featurette method instead of actually showing a portion of the trailer.
Yeah, my suspicion is that if they were to show the footage from the movie without preparing people emotionally for how seriously they were taking this project, that maybe people might not say very charitable things about their first impression of it. Now, I'm skeptical of this project, but that doesn't mean that it is inherently bad or flawed, or that the millions and millions and millions of fans of the Cats musical across the globe are in any way, wrong in liking the musical. But
why do you hate inclusion, Joe? Because apparently it's a movie about inclusion.
This feature, it makes no sense. It is so overwrought and self-congratulatory, and it's like they're shooting like one of those like before the Olympics interstitial things where they're just like, yeah, ever since I was a kid, I always dreamed that I would do this. And it's just like, oh, calm down, everyone. You're in a movie where you're going to play a digital cat who is going to sing about things for a while. So, you know, it's fine. Like, you guys, there's just a part of it where it doesn't feel like they're self-aware in the production of this. about that part of it?
It opens with Jennifer Hudson talking about how much she loves performing and as a singer, and you know how this is a very important story. It neglects to mention that her character's name is Grizabella, which is fun.
Well, but that's what this thing is.
Mr. Mistopheles,
Idris Elba,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Bustopher Jones, Bumble Arena.
I think they should really just embrace the fact that people are gonna snicker and giggle a little bit.
These names are ridiculous. I did think it was kind of amusing to see the set that they built for this, which is 3x size, so that the human beings are cat scale to all of these.
There are several sets they built for this. There's the like milk shop diner set thing. There's the street set where you can see the stoop in front of a house, and I'm sorry, like a Brooklyn brownstone or whatever. And you got some of the other stuff, like a kitchen and what have you. But I'm so interested to find out why they went through that level of effort and work when apparently there's going to be digital fur technology.
No, this is going to be, and I think I mentioned it to you, this is going to be a live-action movie, and they're going to take the technology like they used for Iron Man and the sort of like Ant-Man suit kind of stuff, and they are going to track fur everywhere except the human being's face with sort of 3D mocap style stuff, and it's going to be insane, and you're going to have Jason Derulo dancing around as Rum Tum Tugger in CG fur.
I'm just going to get this out of the way. What I really want more than anything is for Jason Derulo to deviate from the original lyrics by Andrew Lloyd Webber and to actually just say Jason Derulo at some point in the movie.
Start singing his name.
Jason Derulo. Oh,
how great would it be is if like he's home alone as a cat because his human is out, and then he turns on the radio and it's Jason Derulo song and he starts singing along to the part where he sings his name.
Yes. Oh, man. Because... I very closely associate Jason Derulo with Jason Derulo because he's managed to do that in his career.
He's got a little bit of a DJ Khaled thing going on.
I feel bad for Judi Dench. She seems, I don't know. I don't want to say she seems frail, but she seems a little tired in the video. Maybe they just caught her at a bad time. Ian McKellen is in here somewhere at some point, we will have them doing their stuff.
I'm sure they will have the much more dignified roles, and they've got the exquisite Tom Hooper here directing, so I'm sure it will be incredibly tasteful.
my favorite things was when I saw it was Tom Hooper, I was just like, oh, Dan's gonna be so happy, because listeners, you may have forgotten this, but Dan holds a grudge against Tom Hooper because King's Speech beat The Social Network for an Oscar.
Best Picture.
Best Picture Oscar.
I believe it also won for Best Directing.
Mm-hmm. And that just fuels Dan's hatred for the rest of time. It does bias him.
It's such a weirdly directed movie, too. Like, there are parts of the movie that are quite good, and King's Speech is quite a good movie in points. But like, there's a couple of scenes where they're like, we're going to use a 12mm lens and kind of point it at the ceiling, but you'll be able to see the actor's face in the bottom left corner of the frame, so it's fine. It's like, what? Why? Well, I don't know. It's fun. Hey, it throws everyone a little off balance, because how wacky is it that you've got some royalty here with this Australian guy who's not royalty, and they're palling it up and stuff, and he's giving him sass, saying like, we're buddies now.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a fine, it's okay. I don't love it either, but I just generally don't love period pieces. Do very little for me, especially English Edwardian Victorian era kind of
unless pieces. That period is the year like 30,000 when they're in space.
Yes.
Is it still a period piece if it goes forward?
Or if it goes a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and they're evil empire people.
That as well.
Yeah, that's a period piece.
Hmm. Hmm.
They did a good job matching the costumes to the era.
They probably did a lot of research for that because it was a very big budget movie, and they wanted to make sure they got it right.
Yeah. So, anywho, aside from your hatred of Tom Hooper, and our suspicion that maybe they released this featurette to soften the blow of what it looks like, I desperately want to see this trailer. more than any of these movies, I want to see the trailer for Cats.
I want to see what they do with James Corden and Taylor Swift, because they, through all of the cast, they kind of strike me as the sort of like the Timon and Pumbaa characters of this particular kind of universe here. Oh, you got Rebel Wilson too, and she's great in anything, and she'll be a very good cat.
Well, I have some bad news for you, Dan. She's not great in everything.
She's great at being her.
No, one time I saw her, she did a live performance where she was singing Poor Unfortunate Souls, the song by Ursula in The Little Mermaid. She kind of sung it like matter-of-factly and not like a vivacious, you know, drag queen kind of. So it was a little sad. So I don't know what her singing will be like in this particular role. But
have you seen the various pitches perfect?
I have seen the first one, so that's one of them.
You should see the other ones.
I was not enthralled enough to revisit.
They escalate, much like the Fast and Furious. No, not like the Fast and Furious movies, but they do escalate in
Rebel,
amusing
Rebel
ways.
Wilson gets off her motorcycle and skids underneath the truck. Pitch Perfect 3.
I feel like there's something that's not far off of that in one of the movies, but I couldn't tell you what it is at the moment.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, I don't harbor any like ill will towards Cats or assume that it's doomed, but I just am so fascinated by what could possibly be happening with this.
Yeah.
But that's you know, sort of meta to what the movie actually is just like the interest in the movie. Speaking of meta, let's shift gears once again for our last time, for our final time, and talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Speaking of period pieces.
Yeah.
This is a thing.
70s, which, you know, is really outside of the comfort zone for Mr. Tarantino. It's not really known as a 70s sort of cinephile person.
No.
Like, not only is it take place in the 70s, it takes place in the film industry around film actors, and it's really just not his strong suit. So it's great to see him stretching his legs a little bit here and getting outside of what he's used to.
Yeah. And the trailer also shows that there is a foot massage and, there's
a Western, there's Nazis
and explosions and, gunfire and a character praising gunfire.
And Kung Fu, there's a little bit of Kung Fu.
He's really stretching himself in his ninth and final movie. Where he said,
you know, it's like when you write a report and then in the last paragraph you kind of have to summarize what
in
you said
summary.
The rest of the report. In summary, Western, Nazis, Kung Fu, explosions, gunfire, Hollywood, 1970s, Brad Pitt.
Maybe his last movie should have just been a clip show. I don't know. Also, it seems since I actively was avoiding anything about this, because as we've established, Quentin Tarantino doesn't do it for me. And I'm deeply skeptical of things that he does. And while I can find some things that I am entertained by occasionally in Quentin Tarantino products and projects and things, overall, none of his movies have really delivered as like a complete package. And I just didn't really need it to be there for this one. But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is...
Holy crap, it's 2 hours and 41 minutes long.
Really?
That's what IMDb says.
Well, that's surprising. An overly long Quentin Tarantino movie.
Is Quentin Tarantino the new... what's his name who made the Batman movies?
Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan, there you go.
No, I think I would rank Christopher Nolan slightly above Quentin Tarantino. But Quentin is known for his restraint and his humility and not being self-indulgent or having pointless shots that go on forever. So I'm sure
I felt like this trailer was extraordinarily restrained because it didn't feel there were a few shots that felt very Tarantino. Like there was that really weird close up of Margot Robbie's face when she was at the movie theater there. It was like really weird wide angle, Dutch angle thing. But I felt like this was a relatively straightforward kind of 70s era looking trailer that happened to have a lot of Tarantino-esque things in it, but it didn't seem like overly Tarantino filmmaking.
No. Dan, are you high?
Am I incorrect here?
This movie starts with Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio talking to Al Pacino, and Al Pacino jokes around that the other one's, you know, the son, and it's like, oh no, he's my stunt double. And then we reveal that he's a movie star and that he's been in movies, and we show some of the movies that he's been in, including the one where you laughed at fried sauerkraut when there's a flamethrower that kills some Nazis in a movie, a fictitious movie. And then we pivot from that to Sharon Tate. And all of a sudden, an alarm bell went off in my mind, and I'm like, he's not going to have the Manson murders in here, is he? And then, sure enough, the next thing you know, you got Charles Manson and the rest of the group. And
the Mansonettes.
You have Leonardo DiCaprio's failing acting career, like, somehow intercut with Manson being creepy and stalking Sharon Tate. And stuff, and it just gets to the end of the trailer where it's just like, oh man, what's gonna happen? There's so much stuff cut together frenetically, and it's it seems so tasteless. Like, why does it need to be about Sharon Tate and Charles Manson?
I think this came up early on in the story of the production of this, and I believe he said something to the tune of that it is not about the Sharon Tate murders and Charles Manson. It is in the vicinity of that, clearly, but I don't think it's actually about that plot-wise. But who knows? I mean, maybe it'll just be another Tarantino three intertwined plot thing, and then that's like there's going to be a title card that says like the murder of Sharon Tate or some stupid
well,
thing.
Well, you see, the twist is that Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt are going to team up with Sharon Tate to murder Charles Manson, and then
you know what? I wouldn't be surprised at all because he killed Hitler. So
yeah, I mean that would be so unlike Quentin Tarantino. Also, there's literally another movie that does that.
Is it really?
Yeah, they just talked about it on the Flophouse the other week. I had no idea it existed until I heard about it on there. But I believe it is called The Murder of Sharon Tate or something along those lines. Oh, The Haunting of Sharon Tate. That's a movie that exists. It's tasteless and low budget. It was shot in a matter of days. It stars Hilary Duff as Sharon Tate.
Can't go wrong there. No, so she's gonna like go all like Charlie's Angels and like bust out some kung fu moves and kick Charles Manson in the head, and his head's gonna fly off.
No, I don't think that it is appropriate to really. How should I say this? Quentin Tarantino has fans who don't really realize that some of the things that Quentin Tarantino highlights are bad. And much in the same way that not all Fight Club people realize that.
I was going to say, you're doing a Fight Club thing there where people don't realize that like this is not a movie that glorifies punching people in the face.
Yeah, but a lot of people have the takeaway that that's what they get out of it. Or like with American Psycho, a movie we debated covering for a long time because I find it darkly comedic and I find it darkly comedic and a send up of the yuppie culture. And a lot of people, though, unironically, are just like, yeah, business cards, man. And it's like, no.
I got to get a sick suit and slick my hair back and get some dope business cards, and then I'll be rich and I can kill people for fun.
I just don't know what it is, but there is a certain part of me that's just like, whenever I see movies like this, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where I'm just like, no. I can just see the Reddit forums now where like some incel MRA guy is going to be like, yeah, I'm just like this guy. And it's like, no, wrong.
My
wrong
neighbor
lesson.
Was starting a cult, so I killed him to prevent another Charles Manson. That seems a little excessive. And I guess there is an interesting point to comparing like retconning World War II and shooting Hitler in the face with an automatic weapon a bunch of times is not to be taken serious and kind of hilarious in a weird sort of like fantasy way. But when it's something like Charles Manson and Sharon Tate, it's less, it's less something you really want to play with, because it's not really that kind of thing or those kinds of characters. It's tragic and kind of gross.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, we'll see what the movie is actually about. I mean, clearly the majority of it is about DiCaprio aging out of stardom and trying to deal with that, which is kind of hilarious and amusing that you have actual DiCaprio and Brad Pitt both in those roles right there.
Yeah, that's why I said speaking of meta, because Leonardo DiCaprio has been actively trying to age out of being Leonardo DiCaprio for like the past 20 years. And it's incredibly frustrating to watch, and to now watch him play a role where he's just like, oh no, I'm aged out of these roles. It's like, no, you fool. Maybe, I don't know. But at least for this one, maybe he's got his Oscar now, so he's not going to be fishing for it. So hopefully he'll pull back a little.
DiCaprio in Tarantino movies, like, he really goes for it and, you know, tries some stuff. So it'll be interesting to see him perform, if nothing else.
Yeah, I'm not as convinced that, but I'm sure at some point you're going to have me watch this for our podcast that we do together.
Yeah, definitely.
But probably. I don't think I'm going to go watch it in a movie theater.
When does this, how else are you going to see how crystal clear and pristine the film print is?
Well, I won't.
Hmm.
Yes.
You're really not experiencing it in an appropriate cinematic fashion.
Hmm.
Where's the release?
Podcast really doesn't capture the jerk off motion I'm doing with my hand right now, but audience members.
You want to do it against the microphone so we can hear it?
No, I don't really think that is good audio.
July 26th. This is 9 days away from coming out.
Yes, so you better go buy your tickets now, Dan, because it's going to be sold out.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm going to have to book some seats. It's going to be like Endgame, where I have to wait like 3 months to see the damn thing.
No.
Oh, boy. He got some 16mm ektachrome, and he's got some 8mm ektachrome in here, too. So he's really getting into the era.
Why?
I don't know.
Why?
Oh, wow.
Why?
I mean, I assume somebody's going to be taking home movies of themselves because he's got a Bolex in here. Because that's more of a prop than something you actually want to shoot with.
And right.
He's got an 8, and I don't think I've ever said that camera manufacturer name out loud before. AATON. I think it's Aiden.
Sure.
Anyway, they make film cameras, mostly 16mm stuff.
Sounds great.
Yeah. They're really good.
I'm a little sad, though. I guess I should have proofread our list because I don't want to watch any of these movies.
It's summertime. There are blockbusters aplenty. There's something for everybody, Joe.
Mm. Well, one thing we talked about after you posted this list right before we recorded was Dora the Explorer. And I said did not watch that one. And then I proceeded to watch it right before we hit record. So it was not technically part of the list. And wow, that was a thing.
It's like they mixed like a Disney movie and like the Jumanji movie and then something else that's just a little too serious for a Dora the Explorer movie.
Well, it's the only part of it that I really liked was at the very beginning when she looks at the audience, looks at the camera, breaks the fourth wall, as if it was, I guess, the cartoon. And then the family members all turn and try to see what she's looking at and who she's addressing. And they say it's a face she's going to grow out of.
It's definitely a joke that's never been done before.
No, well, but that's what happened in the cartoon, so that's why it's a joke for this.
Oh, right, that's right.
What I really want to know is if they stop the movie and ask people to look around the screen and see if they can find something. But, that is, again, not a property I'm going to see, but it was sort of funny.
In a weird way, well, I mean, in an intentional way, but like, I don't know if you're laughing at it for the reasons that the movie would have you be laughing at.
I think that the people making it are remarkably self-aware of the fact that they're making
it. It does seem a little bit like a Lord Miller style, kind of like a 21 Jump Street, but with Dora the Explorer, if that's a thing.
Not going to be that generous, but the people making this are aware that they're making this movie. Like, it's not like, you know, I would compare this to the Cats featurette, where it seems like the people making the Cats featurette think they're making serious business stuff, and the people making the Dora the Explorer thing are just like, LOL. So, you know, that is on some level appealing to me, because I do like it when people can recognize the ridiculousness of a project. However, that being said, I don't want to watch this. I'm not the age group for it. And
I will fully watch it after having a couple of drinks when it comes on HBO 3 or whatever on my TV.
Are you going to laugh
like 6 months
when they get stuck in the quicksand and they make fart noises and the guy says that they ate chili con carne? Is that going to entertain you?
Is that a joke that's in the movie?
That's in the trailer.
Oh, yes. That I am going to laugh at that because I'm laughing at it now.
Oh.
It's really the carne that gets you. Mm. Well, and the beans.
And the terrible CG monkey.
Oh, it's really bad CG monkey.
And that fox
thing. Maybe they have time to improve it, because it is just a trailer. If we learned anything from Aladdin.
No, if we learned anything from Sonic the Hedgehog.
If we learned anything from Sonic the Hedgehog, it's that filmmakers with no backbone will just go change things because audience members are mad.
Speaking of trailers. Well, but here's the thing. It was bad. It was very bad. It was a bad trailer. Sonic.
It was an oddly proportioned Sonic design. It was a very weird choice, but like, whatever. Like, you had to know.
Yeah, well, no.
Use your eyes.
But
go
see,
for
that,
it.
That's the thing is, like, they obviously did not know that it looked bad. They thought it looked good. And they were surprised about the negative reaction. So now they're going to go redo it so that they don't have this negativity.
It couldn't possibly be the first time somebody said that is weird looking.
No, Dan, you're not understanding this. The people who had money and power thought this looked fantastic and released it, and the negative reaction took them by surprise. Now, everybody who was working on it was probably like, this looks crazy, but they don't get to talk to the people who have the money and the power who are on the project. So I'm dubious that the next iteration of this will look any better.
I mean, all they have to do is go on Reddit and look in the threads, because there's a lot of people who sort of armchair redesigned Sonic to look more like Sonic.
Yeah, but
they could just steal those designs.
Oh, well, but it's not even that, though. It's like, now that they did it, now that they've shown that they're willing to change it, no matter what they come back with, it's going to be armchair quarterbacked again, because now everybody knows that the mob is in charge and not the people making the movie, which is interesting. So, like, for instance, if based on our podcast, any of the people who put out these trailers today went back and re-edited their movie or changed the characters or the effects or something just because of what we said, then that would be super weird, wouldn't it?
If we had that power, I would do so many podcast episodes about Jurassic World and Jurassic World 2.
I feel like we did so many podcast episodes.
I know. I would do as many podcasts as was necessary for them to undo all of that.
Yeah. The ride is open now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Universal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they dismantled the Jurassic Park ride and they turned it into the Jurassic World ride, which is largely the same, but there are some large displays that show you that underwater monster thing.
The Mosasaur?
Yeah, and it moseys about. And there's an Indominus Rex and an Indominus Rex sign. And you got Chris Pratt in there.
Are there screens where Chris Pratt talks to the people saying, you've got to run for it, go get help?
No. He says, stay safe, don't move, stay inside the thing. So, the opposite of what you said. But he is on a monitor, because that's the kind of thing we got here. It's a Universal ride, after all.
They've got whatever they renamed the Tower of Terror at Disneyland with the collector, and he talks to you in a lot of different things.
Yeah, they have the Guardians of the Galaxy... escape from blah blah blah.
Guardians of the Galaxy present the collector's droppy elevator in accordance with chewing 5 gum or something.
Yeah.
You see the photo I sent you in the Skype?
I did not.
You should look at it.
Okay.
I'm curious what you think Mr. Tarantino would have to say about the video featurette on the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood IMDb page there.
Well, I think he would say that it's a lot of hullabaloo.
I mean, specifically the IMDb brief presented by Progressive Sign embedded in his frame there.
I don't know. He's probably not checking this himself. But I have to say this about the logo for the IMDb brief presented by Progressive Branding. It looks awful. And it looks like some sort of prescription advertisement that you should consult your doctor about before you take IMDb brief. So it's weird. It's weird graphic design. And it's especially strange because it's IMDb and it's IMDb brief. I just want to add the extra. I want to add the extra B. It's annoying. It irritates me.
I'm sorry.
Yes. So anyway, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
It doesn't upset Quentin Tarantino, but it upset me. And on that note, that spectacular note about trailers,
let's all go to the lobby and we'll catch you folks next time.
Mm. And I'm sorry that I pooped on everything if you were expecting something else.
We were definitely expecting something different of you.
Yeah, no, but it's my genuine feelings about this. I'm not just saying this because everybody else loves these things.
Why do you got to be a naysayer? Just to hate on everybody.
Yeah, haters gonna hate. But I don't know. We'll see how these movies fare once they're released. I'm willing to bet somebody's going to write an article about franchise fatigue when Terminator Dark Fate comes out.
Are you fatigued by the franchise?
Well, I'm not fatigued by the franchise necessarily, but I feel like they need to stop making these ones that are just fan fiction of how much people liked the other ones. So they should do something else.
Mm.
Yeah, but that's not franchise fatigue.
Do you think people have franchise fatigue when it comes to our podcast?
No, because this isn't a franchise.
I mean, there's a lot of them, though.
But that's not a franchise.
You don't think people are, like, tuning in and they're like, it wasn't as good as Cats Per Mango, but maybe the next one will be.
Oh, man. I'm going to assume that there are a lot of people who have abandoned this podcast over the years. But,
oh, no.
That's just, you know... That's how the cookie crumbles. It's all my negativity. Mm. It's worn on people.
You're pushing people away.
Mm-hmm. I should just be nicer and say that I like things that people like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. And on that happy note.
The end.
Goodbye, everyone.